Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So tonight we will read from Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and we'll read from chapter 7, chapter 7, verse 25. Chapter 7 is entitled Knowledge of the Absolute. Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrita mudho yam nabijanati loko mam ajam avyayam. Translation: I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them, I am covered by my internal potency, and therefore they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. Let us recite this translation responsibly. You can repeat after me. I am never manifest.
I am manifest
to the foolish and unintelligent.
For them I am covered
by my internal potency.
And therefore they do not know
that I am unborn and infallible. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It may be argued that since Krishna was present on this earth and was visible to everyone, then why isn't he manifest to everyone now? But actually, he was not manifest to everyone. When Krishna was present, there were only a few people who could understand him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the assembly of Kurus, when Shishupal spoke against Krishna's being elected president of the assembly, Bhishma supported Krishna and proclaimed him to be the supreme god. Similarly, the Pandavas and a few others knew that he was the supreme, but not everyone. He was not revealed to the non-devotees and the common man. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that but for his pure devotees, all men consider him to be like themselves. He was manifest only to his devotees as the reservoir of all pleasure. But to others, to unintelligent non-devotees, he was covered by his internal potency. In the prayers of Kunti, in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.19, it is said that the Lord is covered by the curtain of yoga maya, and thus ordinary people cannot understand him. This yoga maya curtain is also confirmed in the Ishapanishad mantra 15, in which the devotee prays Haranmayena Patrena Satyasya Pihitam Mukham Tattvam Pushan Apavrinu Satya Dharmaya Drishtaye, which means, O my Lord, you are the maintainer of the entire universe, and devotional service to you is the highest religious principle. Therefore, I pray that you will also maintain me. Your transcendental form is covered by the yoga maya. The Brahma Jyoti is the covering of the internal potency. May you kindly remove this glowing effulgence that impedes my seeing your Satchit Ananda Vigraha, your eternal form of bliss and knowledge. Unquote. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his transcendental form of bliss and knowledge, is covered by the internal potency of the Brahma Jyoti, and the less intelligent impersonalists cannot see the Supreme on this account. Also, in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.7, there is this prayer by Brahma: O Supreme Personality of Godhead, O Supersoul, O Master of all mystery, who can calculate your potency and pastimes in this world? You're always expanding your internal potency, and therefore no one can understand you. Learned scientists and learned scholars. We don't have ours. Learned scientists and learned scholars can examine the atomic constitution of the material world, or even the planets, but still they are unable to calculate your energy and potency, although you are present before them. Unquote. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is not only unborn, but also avyaya, inexhaustible. His eternal form is bliss and knowledge, and his energies are all inexhaustible. Naham prakasha saravasya yoga maya samavrita mudho yam nabijana ti lokomam ajam avyayam. Translation: I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by my internal potency, and therefore they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. Om Gyanatam Randasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Nimitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanyamano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutane Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swaha Anjagapa Tarubhya Sya Kripa Sindhu Vyeva Cha Manidhanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha, Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is quite a well-known verse in Bhagavad Gita. Lord Krishna is talking about different types of people who misunderstand him, who don't understand him, and somehow they come to some faulty conclusion about who he is, what is his position, and what he may do or not do, or be able to do or not be able to do. But Krishna, he is very special. He is not subject to being controlled by some ordinary people. Here he describes mudhas, foolish people who misunderstand him, who are envious of him, actually. And because they're envious, then they think that there couldn't be such a person. He couldn't have done all these things, displayed his universal form, expanded himself into so many forms, and married so many queens in Dwarka, or so many amazing things Krishna did. And they think, no, it's not possible. I can't do it. So how could he do it? In this way, they demonstrate the fundamental qualification or fundamental feature of the consciousness of the conditioned soul. That is, that the conditioned souls are envious of Krishna. They would like to compete with Krishna
and take Krishna's position like this. And instead of Krishna being the supreme enjoyer, they would like to be the supreme enjoyers. So this is there, at the root of the consciousness of every conditioned soul, an attitude of envy. Envy towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Srila Prabhupada told one story. Some of you may be familiar with this, I'm sure some of you are, about envy. Just illustrating what is envy. Srila Prabhupada told a story that one time two old school friends met after they hadn't seen each other for many years, maybe for 20 years, hadn't seen each other since leaving school. Somehow they met, and there was very friendly spirit of remembering the old days and asking, how is such and such doing? When you meet people you haven't seen for a long time, it's like that. Catching up on all those people that you haven't seen. So one of them asked the other, and what about such and such? What a silly fool he was. And the other man said, well, no, actually, you might be surprised, but he is now a high court judge. Yes, he is very important and very respected, and very responsible duties, very intelligent man. And the first person said, what? Him? I don't believe it. I remember him from those days. What a foolish person. He could never be a high court judge. It's not possible. And the other person said, no. It's definitely true. I was there. I saw him. And the first man said, well, maybe, but I'm sure they're not paying him. So it should have told that. Told us. Envy. Enviousness. So the root of all envy is that envy that we have, that attitude we have towards Krishna. And if we can uproot that, then we will find that all of our envy just dissolves. It just disappears. That is the root of all the envy which we may experience in different situations. When people do better than us, people are more popular than us, or like this, you know, all these different things which happen which arouse some feelings of envy towards others. So in Krishna consciousness, our principle, of course, is you just water the root of the tree. And if you water the root of the tree, then the benefit is felt in every part of the tree. All of the leaves and fruits and flowers and twigs and branches. Every little part of the tree will be nourished just by watering the root of the tree. And it is not that you have to go to every leaf or fruit or flower and put a little water there. And in this way you might think that you are addressing the needs of that particular thing in the best way, by directly offering some water. No, actually, you really help all the parts of the tree when you, in the best way and in the only real and truly effective way, when you water the root of the tree. So similarly, we are prone to be envious. Have any of you ever experienced that? Did you? A little bit? He says he experienced it a little bit. Any of you ladies? No? Oh, you're doing pretty well. So we might have experienced a little envy sometimes. And naturally a devotee Because devotees are very special people. Devotees are very sensitive people, and they're very concerned about how they are and how they're conducting themselves, and they don't want to do the wrong things and be offensive. So therefore devotees are often concerned about being envious, and they want to not be envious and on the lookout like that. Whereas materialistic people, they may not be so concerned generally. But if we really want to get rid of our propensity to become envious, then we should give up our envy towards Krishna. What does that mean, our envy towards Krishna? We may not be sitting here thinking, oh, Krishna, I don't like how he is worshipped so much. Something like that. We may not be directly thinking in some sort of, you know, way about Krishna like that. But still, actually the manifest form, if you go right to the root, you'll find it, actually, that we may still be a little doubtful about Krishna like that. But the manifest form, on a very practical level, is that we are not really, maybe, sometimes, we may not really be so inclined to surrender to Krishna, but rather we would be more inclined to hold back, reserve a little for ourselves. As one devotee said one time, one for Krishna and one for me. And one for Krishna and one for me. And if the going gets difficult, then none for Krishna for the time being and two for me, but I'll get back to Krishna if things look up a bit more. So this is really on a very practical level, the manifest form of our envy, of everyone's envy, that everyone has some program for benefiting themselves. But of course, in the case of the gross materialists, they have no inclination to benefit Krishna at all. But in the case of us as aspiring devotees, trying to become devotees and get free from all these things, then the manifest form is that sometimes then we're not really so inclined to surrender to Krishna, but we're more concerned about ourselves and looking after ourselves like this. Yeah, this is really the manifest form. Whereas on a more advanced level, then nothing is too much for Krishna. Nothing is too much for Krishna. The devotee will do anything, everything for Krishna without any holding back or delay, without needing to be prompted. I think I'll just hold this. Otherwise we may have everyone maintain it. Oh, okay. Just hold it a little closer. Just don't mind. Yes. So this is our problem, really, because we're all trying to become devotees. But we're all coming from material existence, and we're conditioned by material existence in many ways. But we're trying to move forward to come to that point of pure devotional service. But sometimes we don't really want to surrender so much, and we want to hold back for ourselves and look after ourselves, or even sometimes we may directly try to promote our own interests and sort of neglect Krishna's influence, interests. But advancement in devotional service and becoming free from envy means that we become more and more genuinely concerned about pleasing Krishna, and less really concerned about pleasing ourselves and helping ourselves and like this. So anyway, here Lord Krishna is talking about how he relates with those people, the envious people, the foolish mudha, he uses that term, mudha. Mudha means foolish person, unintelligent person. So how does Krishna relate with such a person, with such people? He says, Yoga Maya Samavrita, I am covered by my Yoga Maya, internal potency, that deluding Maya potency, illusory potency, which encourages us, encourages people to think or to conclude about things in ways which are not correct, and to perceive things in ways that are not correct. Yes, so Krishna says, for those mudhas, those foolish, unintelligent people, those non-devotees, those people who are envious, they're really envious of him, then he doesn't manifest himself. He doesn't manifest himself. But to the devotees he does, and at least in due course of time. So Krishna is very amazing and very special like this. Srila Prabhupada begins the purport by making a point which, interestingly enough, I'm just a little surprised and interested to see, that Srila Prabhupada begins the purport by making a point which we were discussing on Friday at the beginning of the questions and answers session. I don't know how many of you were there then, but we were discussing how some people say that they wish that Krishna was here now. Why won't Krishna just walk in and just, as he did with Lord Brahma, he walked up to Brahma and shook his hand. Why won't Krishna just walk up to me and say, here I am. Here I am. Sri Sri Nitai Gaura Hari Ki Jai. Sri Sri Nitai Sachi Sutta Ki Jai. I can just hold it. I think
it's not got the sense of it.
Yeah, some people think, now, wouldn't it be nice if Krishna would just walk in here right now? Of course, for the devotees, it would be nice. But it is not exactly as some people think, that if Krishna were to just walk in here now and just start performing his pastimes now, it is not that the whole world would suddenly become Krishna conscious. Is not like that. And Srila Prabhupada explains that Krishna, when Krishna was here 5,000 years ago, then many people didn't recognize him or understand that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada here mentions one of the chief of those people, Shishupal. Shishupal, who fanatically hated Krishna. Yes, he hated Krishna so much that he never forgot Krishna for one second in his entire life. So, he was very special, of course, but there were many people, and they didn't accept Krishna. In fact, Prabhupada says here, only a few really did, even though Krishna did many amazing things, but only a few people really accepted Krishna. So it is not necessary that Krishna appear here in order for the world to become Krishna conscious. But there is a need for people to actually change their consciousness. There is a need for that. For people to change their consciousness. And when people change their consciousness, then they may get the eyes to see Krishna. Krishna is present. Krishna is present on the altar. There's a nice story I was actually going to tell, I sort of looked up a few stories to tell on Saturday night, but somehow got a bit carried away in another way. But there was one nice story that I read, and that story, that pastime of Srila Prabhupada's, it took place when, back in perhaps 1972 or something like that, Srila Prabhupada installed the Radha Krishna deities in our temple in Paris, France. Radha Paris Ishwara. They're very beautiful deities. And they look French. They look French. Very kind of, you know, sophisticated and fashionable or something like that. Maybe. Yes. So anyway, Srila Prabhupada performed the installation ceremony, and then afterwards, at the end of it, he performed the first arati. And some devotees took some photos. And then the next day, I think, they had the photos developed, and they're showing Srila Prabhupada. There's Prabhupada bathing the deities and doing all the different functions. He did everything. He did the fire sacrifice. He did the abhishek. Then he did the arati. Prabhupada looked through the pictures, and he was looking at the pictures of himself doing arati to Krishna, to Radha Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada, his mood, when he got to those pictures, his mood was one of great joy. Transcendental joy and jollity and, you know, like deep satisfaction. He was smiling, beaming, looking at his photos. Then he saw one photo and his face just lit up like glee, excited. And Prabhupada, sort of the devotee, Shruta Kirti, who wrote the remembrance, he said that Prabhupada lit up, his face lit up, just like a little boy is, you know, very excited about something wonderful. And Prabhupada said about the one photo where he's offering arati, he said, look, I am looking at Krishna, and Krishna is looking at me. So Srila Prabhupada, very elevated, transcendental person, is having a very intimate type of interaction with the deity. Yes. So, for such a devotee, then this yoga maya samavrita, this covering of the illusory potency, illusory energy of the Lord, this covering is not there. That the pure devotee is seeing Krishna and interacting with Krishna, relating with Krishna personally, because that yoga maya, that illusory potency, that curtain, Queen Kunti refers in her prayers in the 8th chapter of the first canto. She says that you are just like an actor who's dressed up as a player. You're covered by the curtain of deluding energy. So for the great devotees like Srila Prabhupada, that curtain has been removed. And he is there with Krishna. Krishna is there with him. Yes. We are also with Krishna. Krishna is also here. But we are not seeing Krishna. I'm not seeing Krishna. I don't know about any of you, but I suspect you're not seeing Krishna. I think we're sort of in the same boat, largely. So why is that? Because it means we're still covered by the yoga maya, samavrita. Not as much as those who are just grossly in maya, grossly envious, Not that much. But still it's there. Still there. So we're not really seeing Krishna. Although sometimes, of course, for the aspiring devotees, Krishna reveals himself in different ways. But that is, you know, little sort of indirect, or not in that very direct sense of walking up to you face to face and saying, hello. Not like that. Which I think also is a very nice one. It's different from that one. But it's very short. Srila Prabhupada was walking somewhere in a city in America, in a park, sort of on the edge of the main central area with the big buildings and everything. So they're walking through the park, and they came to one children's playground, and like an amusement park for children, all sorts of machines and rides and quite sort of a high-tech children's playground. And on it, the name of that playground, it said, Children's Fairyland. Srila Prabhupada turned and pointed to the skyscrapers, said, Adult's Fairyland. So the more we're caught up in it all, and it means everything, or it means a lot to us, being caught in the day-to-day existence, humdrum existence, which is actually the existence of the mudhas. The more we're caught up in it, in the sense of embracing it, as if it was something very important and real and necessary and even desirable, then it means we're also kind of in the same position. Yeah. Kind of caught in that same position, like those materialistic people. Under the influence of that yoga mind, that deluding energy. So, we have to get out of that. And Lord Brahma says in Brahma Samhita, Vedeshu Dulabham Adulabham Atma Bhakta. That to understand Krishna clearly and in truth, in reality, to understand Krishna, that even by studying the Vedas, Vedeshu Dulabham, very difficult, but Adulabham Atma Bhakta. The more we develop that mood of devotion, the more we surrender to Krishna and put Krishna's interests ahead of ours, and we stop worrying so much about ourselves and how we're doing and making sure we're going to be all right, and like that, our own independent plans to protect ourselves. So the more we actually become absorbed in that mood of bhakti, of devotion, of pleasing Krishna, then the more that yoga maya smarita, the more that curtain of the deluding energy will be removed. Yes, because we are in that process right now. This is what it's all about. We're trying to bridge that gap from that one side of mudo yam abhijanati, or just being completely bewildered by the material energy. Bridge that gap, cross over to the other side, where we are face to face with Krishna. Premanjana charita bhakti alochanena santasadaiva hridayeshu the lokayanti, where the devotee whose eyes have been anointed with the ointment of love, then they see Krishna within their hearts. They always see Krishna within their hearts. They are with Krishna. So we're somewhere in between, isn't it? And sometimes, you know, we're heading, trying to go in that direction towards Krishna. Sometimes we hit a little detour or something, a roadblock, some obstruction, as they say in India, in North India, when you come to the roadworks, Savadhan, Savadhan, yes, Savadhan means warning, watch out. And actually we have that word. It appears in the song Sri Guru Charanapadma. What is it? Sri Guru Charanapadma Kevala Bhakati Sadhana Bandhavi Sabhata Mate. Yeah. So there we're getting a little hint, or we're being told very clearly, really, that Narayana Das Thakur says that the lotus feet of the spiritual master are the only way to attain pure devotional service. So, therefore I bow down to those lotus feet, Savadhan, very carefully, with great care and attention. You know, when I, the first time, of course I've driven down many a road in India, seen many a vehicle on its side. They call it when the trucks go onto their side, in a light-hearted way, they call it lorry sleeping. Lorry sleeping. Yes. Of course, the poor driver, he may be sort of sleeping in a certain sense. Lorry sleeping. So, you know, as I started to learn a little bit of Sanskrit, a little bit of Hindi, I could read what it says. I thought, oh, it says Savadhan. When you come to the roadworks, you know, watch out, watch out. Yeah, so we have to watch out that we don't hit a little detour, hit a bump. You know, we can use these types of metaphors. Hit a pothole, like in Russia, the whole car disappears in the pothole. The pothole may be 1 meter deep. Yes, so devotional service is like that. You know, sometimes it's said that the path of devotional service is like walking on a razor's edge. You heard that? Yeah. Because we don't want to scare you. Put you off, put you on the defensive. But it's said like that sometimes. Prabhupada used that concept many times. So that means that you've got to be careful, because when you're dealing with a razor blade, just a moment's inattention, you can get a nasty cut quite easily. Yes. So therefore this song is said, Sri Guru Charanapadma Kevala Bhakati Sadhana Bandho Bhui Savadhan Mate. That if we're really going to make progress in Krishna consciousness and get free from this yoga maya samavrita, this curtain of deluding energy, then we should take shelter of the lotus feet of the spiritual master. And that means particularly, of course, anyway, that means particularly, or first. First it means that we should take shelter of the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada. He is the first of all of our spiritual masters, even though of course many of you have your own spiritual masters also. But Srila Prabhupada is actually the first spiritual master of all of us. Yes, his instructions are forming the very foundation, and more than just the foundation, but practically the structure of the whole process of Krishna consciousness as we are practicing it. Yes. So Savadhan, we should be very careful. We should try and practice devotional service very carefully, step by step, and doing things nicely. And based on, the idea is to move forward in this mood Vedeshu Duravam Adulavam Atma Bhakto. That simply through studying the Vedas or by any other means, it's very difficult to approach Krishna or understand them. But Adulavam Atma Bhakto. If we can actually develop a mood of devotion, then it can be very easy. Very easy. Prabhupada, there's a very nice lecture Srila Prabhupada gave on Bhagavad Gita chapter 12, verses 13 and 14. It's the first, they are the first of a series of verses in which Krishna is saying, he is listing out a number of personal qualities which we can develop. Personal qualities which he says that if you become like this, then you will be very dear to me. If you're friendly to all living entities, not envious, and so on and so forth. A whole lot of qualities, Krishna says, if you're like this, you'll be very dear to me. So in that lecture, Srila Prabhupada makes a wonderful point. He says, yes, this is Krishna consciousness. How will Krishna love me? We often think, how will I love Krishna? But Prabhupada's turning it around. How will Krishna love me? What can I do? What must I become to inspire Krishna so that when Krishna looks at me, he thinks, oh, how wonderful. Here is my devotee. I want him. Yes, and if Krishna decides he wants you, then that's that, basically. So, adulabham atma bhakto, we can actually cultivate this mood of devotion by following the process very carefully, serving according to the directions particularly given by Srila Prabhupada, then we will become that sort of person. Krishna will want us. We will not have to worry, how do I sneak through, you know, the past Jaya and Vijaya, the doorkeepers of Vaikuntha, and sneak into Vaikuntha? How do I get there? We won't have to worry about that. But Krishna will come and take us by the here or by the seeker and drag us back to Godhead. This is very important. This is very important. How will Krishna love me? How will I inspire Krishna so that Krishna will notice me? As Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, you know, there was the one incident, famous incident, where he was giving a class at Sheshashayi, which is right in the middle of Rajmundle, in the middle of nowhere. He was giving a class there on the Rajmundle Parikrama, and there's one old deity there. So he was giving class in a sort of like a hall, or maybe even outside, just right next to the temple where that deity is. And suddenly the arati for the deity began, and a number of the people there, including some of his senior disciples, they went in to have darshan of the deity. And then they came back after the arati, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta asked them, where did you go? And they said, one of them said, we went to see Krishna. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, don't try to see God, but try to act in such a way that God will see you. Yes. How will Krishna love me? What can I do so that I'll become lovable to Krishna? Yes, so in this way, that yoga maya, that deluding curtain, that deluding curtain can be removed from our eyes, and then we can actually see things. We can actually see things as they are. We can see ourselves. We can see Krishna. we can see everyone else, see everything very clearly. Everything will be very wonderful. So this is actually what we need. We need people to take up the process of Krishna consciousness and follow it carefully. And then they will come to the point of becoming purified and realizing Krishna, realizing God and their relationship with Him. Then their lives will change. Then this whole world can change, actually. But don't wait until Krishna... You know, some people... We meet some people and we invite them, oh, come to the temple. Please come. And they say, oh yes, if Krishna wants, when Krishna wants, when Krishna wants. As if one day Krishna will just pick them up and just drop them right here. And then, oh, Krishna wanted. So with people like that, sometimes we think at least of asking them, so, how did your television get here? did Krishna pick you up and take you to the TV shop and just push this TV into your hands and just bring you back and stick it here and push you into the seat in front of it and turn it on and make it play the bold and the beautiful? Was it like that? No, it wasn't like that. So, you rascal. You rascal. No, so it doesn't work like that. Then that's mudra, actually. Yeah. And that's yoga vice mudra. Still under that curtain, deluding curtain. So, Krishna says, I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them, I am covered by my internal potency. And therefore, they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. So we're all trying to bridge that gap, go from being like that, we've all been like that, and come to that point. Sri Sri Vitae Gora Hari Keda. Trying to come to that point of being fully God-realized, seeing Krishna face to face. So that can come. That can come. But Savadharma, we have to follow the process carefully. Yes, it's not a cheap thing. Not a cheap thing. Not that now that, you know, sometimes it happens, we see some devotees, they want to be initiated. So, oh, they hear all the time, all the programs, they hear, they're doing things here and there, involved in with the devotees and doing some service, then they get initiated and the next day you don't see them. Or maybe they get second initiation, then you don't see them, or something. Yes. In order to deal with this, or at least to help deal with this type of consciousness, we have started the Siksha program. I don't know how many of you are familiar with that. Siksha program means that we divide up a person's progress into many stages, and being initiated, well, as the Siksha program stands, there the second initiation is the last stage. But we are thinking of making sannyas, adding sannyas, and possibly going back to Godhead. We were thinking of making, going back to Godhead, becoming fully Krishna conscious, the last stage, with all different stages, you know, after second initiation, keep people on their toes. Of course, who's going to judge that? You know, get past a certain point, it becomes a little difficult to judge. But anyway, just by the way, yeah. So we don't want to be lazy people. We want to move forward. We should always be thinking, what is my next step forward? For me, we're all individuals. We're here maybe 40, 50 individuals or so. So we're all in 40 or 50 different positions. Yeah, because we're all individuals. So for each of us, the next step is a particular step which is particular to us, specific to us. It's not the same for all of us. So that we have to try to ascertain by the mercy of the devotees, the mercy of the spiritual master, also by introspection and getting some inspiration from Krishna. But we should try and take Krishna consciousness like this. We want to get out of this trap, covered by the illusory energy. We want to get out of this trap, then we have to really try to see what is actually the next step forward for me. Try and ascertain that as carefully as we can, and then take it. Yeah. Don't just speculate on your own without consulting. Because if you speculate on your own, then you may think that the next step, is something else. The wrong step. And then you may just throw yourself out. But if we take shelter nicely and get Krishna's mercy from within, the help of the devotees from outside, we can see what is the next step. And then we can move forward and progress in our Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is meant to be like that, progressive, not just a thing. You just become Krishna conscious, and once you are, you are. And all the devotees are, so they're all, it's just one thing. No, it's very progressive. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Sri Srimadaya Gaura Hari. Himself as Hari Hara, half Vishnu and half Shiva. I saw the Rameshwar temple's calendar with such a picture. Well, I don't know about the Rameshwar temple, but there's a famous deity in Navadvip who is called Hari Hara, and he is half Vishnu and half Shiva. Do you remember the story behind that? I don't remember the story exactly. But he is half Vishnu and half Shiva. So, and there's a whole pastime behind that. But, you know, like, in the different temples you find around here and there, then, you know, they're often not really entirely authentic. They're often a little speculative, thank you. And we should really, preferably just stick with that which is truly authorized. Yeah. Like, you know, all the demigod worship, all the demigod worship people just get a few pictures, right? Shiva, Durga, a few others, put them on an altar in their house and do a little puja something, something. Well, you know, like you see here on our altar, we have our disciplic succession there. And when we offer the worship, it's done through the disciplic succession. It's not just me and Krishna, and I'm just offering things to Krishna. No, through disciplic succession. So, in demigod worship, there are also disciplic successions. Oh, yes. Most of them are defunct. But most of all the disciplic successions are either defunct or on the way to being so. And really only our Brahma Mata Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, the disciplic succession is really solid. But I've been in some Shiva, old Shiva temples in South India, and they have their disciplic succession, you know. Different little murtis of their gurus, you know, some of them, many, many. But in all the cases, as I saw, the succession was broken, stopped at a certain point a few hundred years ago. Yeah. So it is not that, you know, some people just get together, ship in a few murtis from India, stick them on the altar, and away they go. And, you know, it's the local temple, and it's all fine. And the demigods are just happy with the whole process, and they're going to, you know, get involved and start reciprocating. It doesn't work like that at all. No. All these things are done through the cyclic succession. Yeah, we can't approach Krishna, but you can't approach Durga either. Just walk up to her and say, here I am, give me something. You can't do that. These are big, big people. And you can only approach them through their system on their terms. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of these things, they're just kind of sentiment in different ways. Oh boy, this is an interesting question. Should one feel obliged to take initiation from a guru who constantly smiles at one? We will look very stern. Writes letters and visits one's home. Who constantly smiles at one, writes letters and visits one's home. How to know who is one's guru? Well, anyway, this type of question, of course, we're asked quite frequently, and it's a very important question. You know, we should take initiation from the person who helps us the most in our Krishna consciousness and inspires us the most. That's who we should take initiation from. Of course, you know, if people smile at you, that's nice, isn't it? But if you don't like it, well, I don't know, what does that mean? Yeah, and if you, it depends, you know, if this person is just writing letters to you, you know, every week there's just another letter appearing there, you know, if you are writing letters and the guru is writing back, then don't feel bad about that. Anyway, it's meant to be like that whoever helps you actually in guiding you forward, and it's meant to be a practical relationship of being instructed or asking questions, receiving instructions and encouragement, you know, which might include being smiled at. And, you know, things like this, in practical terms, so you can actually move forward in your Krishna consciousness. That's really the best thing. That's what the relationship is meant to be. That you are asking questions and getting good direction and advice and rendering service, reciprocating by rendering service. Okay, so here we have another question. If a person was sinful all their life, and at the time of death chants the holy name, what happens to those sinful activities? Well, the person, you know, it's quite a good question, really, because there are different types of chanting. Like, the classic story is the story of Ajamil. I think many of you would have heard of him. And at the time of death, he'd been very sinful. But at the time of death, somehow or other, there were some special circumstances, and he chanted the holy names. But now, that chanting was of a particular type. It's not that there's chanting of the holy names, there's just one type of chanting of the holy names. And, you know, once anyone who chants, they're just doing it in that way. No, there are different levels of chanting. So that chanting of Ajamil, that's called Namabhas. That means that it wasn't offensive. It wasn't offensive means he wasn't trying to use the holy name to get something material. Yeah. He wasn't sort of misconstruing. If you know what the 10 offenses are, then you would know what we mean by it not being offensive. He wasn't speculating about it. He just called out in an innocent way, really. So it wasn't offensive, but it wasn't pure. It wasn't done in pure, loving devotion. It wasn't done like that. It was somewhere in between. So that is called Nanavas. There are actually three stages, really. Offensive,